At Total Wine & More, find the best gifts for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for sis or a single barrel bourbon that dad will love. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21. Where can you find the best gifts at great low prices that everyone will love? At Total Wine & More, of course, with so many great bottles to choose from. Find something for everyone on your list, whether it's a Cabernet for your sis, sparkling wine for a coworker, or a single barrel bourbon for dad. And if you need any help, just ask one of their friendly guides for advice. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find. Only at Total Wine & More. Spirits not sold in Virginia and North Carolina. Drink responsibly. B21.
Hello, this is Adam Janowski from New York City.
Hi, I'm Ridley from Batavia, New York.
This is Ali.
I eat eggs for dinner way more often than I would like to admit.
Hi, my name is Jonah, and I'm calling into Burnt Toast because I believe that every meal should end with a dessert. And Amanda, I know you believe the same thing.
Hi, and welcome to Burnt Toast from Food52.com, a podcast about what we all talk about around the stove, at the water cooler, in the office. It's what doesn't make it on the website, but what we're all talking about otherwise. I'm Kenzie Wilbur, managing editor of Food52, and I'm here with Amanda Hesser and Meryl Stubbs, co-founders of our company and also my bosses. Hi, guys.
Hi, Kenzie.
Hey.
And today we're going to try something a little bit different. We constantly get asked about meal planning in our comment sections, on the hotline, in person, so we thought we'd dedicate a whole episode to answering your questions on the subject. Everyone wants to know how to cook a little smarter during the week, myself included, so we challenged our staff and community to stump us. Today we're going to see if that happened. But before we start, I wanted to ask you a question of my own that I have, because I carry around a lot of guilt about the food that I waste all the time. You know, those like cartons of buttermilk that go unused in the fridge, or that can of coconut milk that I open and then never finish. And I wanted to know if you had a similar confessional. So what is in the graveyard of your fridge?
Oh, man, cheese nubs. I try and eat them.
I do. Amanda knows this.
I love cheese, so I always tempted to buy more cheese than any human could possibly ever consume. And I think I do a pretty good job, but I'm always left with, like, it's usually the softer cheeses that don't last as long. The harder ones, I can always kind of, like, you know, grate them into a soup or something like that. But it's the soft ones that really, like, they start to get a little sticky and slimy.
Ooh.
And that's when even I can't bear to kind of suck it up.
See, cheese nubs I consider like a veritable ingredient. Like, I'm like,
yeah,
oh, I have cheese
totally,
nubs on
but
hand.
I'm talking about the slimy cheese nubs.
The slimy ones.
Yeah. There are useful cheese nubs and then there are not so useful ones.
Amanda, do you have any?
I do. It's a cucumber.
Oh, oh,
good one. They always end up rotting before I use them.
It's the slimy again.
It is. Yeah. And I just like, I have such optimism when I buy them. And I have all of these salads and like little, I'm going to make cucumber drinks and everything's going to be wonderful.
Cucumber
and
drinks.
I'm
going to
feel very
so
pure. And
like
then I open the refrigerator and I cruise right by the cucumber and go right to the
something
cheese
sexier. The cheese nuts.
See, I feel like I would lose a lot of stuff in your fridge. I have a smaller fridge because I have a tiny, tiny apartment and a tiny, tiny fridge to match it. And I feel like it really helps me like cycle stuff out.
I actually have a lot of guilt about my condiments. Do you feel the same way? Like, I feel like there are condiments back there, probably even homemade ones, and that may not be labeled perfectly. And I'm sort of like, I don't even want to go there. So I just don't.
Yeah, I feel like, yes, I have this whole, yes, like, section of condiments that just gets completely
overlooked.
Like, ignored, yeah, and neglected, and they're very sad, and they huddle together and scorn
and
me when I open the
fridge. And they're probably
really
good, right?
Yeah, they're perfectly, yes, they've done nothing. They've done nothing wrong
to deserve the treatment.
But my question is, why guilt? Like, condiments, I think, are introverts.
They're expensive.
They want to sit back there, but they're not going to go bad.
No, but I mean, they sort of do. You know what? It's not that they go bad. I find that a lot of them go dark. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
When your condiments
like horseradish. I had all of these great
exactly
horseradishes. And then they get that like dark layer on the top. And then you're like, I've lost.
I've lost this battle.
I've lost this battle.
Condiments
and I'm a bad person.
Amanda, zero.
Do you have any stories about like in a moment of desperation scraping off that dark layer
oh,
and just
yeah
using what's
oh,
underneath?
Yes. Many stories.
But also like that's okay, right? Like, Are we okay?
I scraped mold off a yogurt last night and ate it. Sorry, I'm just gonna. Merrill
Wins. I call that probiotic.
Yeah, that's right? What my mom
It's all
would
in
say.
There anyway.
Okay, good. I feel much better.
So that's a good segue into talking about just avoiding food waste. So should we listen to our first call?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let's
Very
do
curious.
It.
Okay.
Hello, this is Adam Janowski from New York City. Whenever I make a recipe with parsley or basil, I always have a bunch of it left over. So my question is, what to do with leftover herbs?
I feel like this is a classic leftover question.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah, because you get so much when you buy a bunch of herbs.
Yeah.
And very few recipes call for the whole thing.
Exactly.
And then, I mean, I do a really lazy thing with my herbs where I wash them and then I grab the whole thing with like my fist and then I just like shave off the top.
That's pretty impressive. I just, like, grab it off the top with my
fist. Oh, okay.
I don't even bother with a knife.
But either way, it's sort of just, like, animalistic. Like,
right.
You take what
you've
you need, you throw the rest
pillaged.
In the, you've
yeah,
pillaged your
true.
Herbs.
Are you talking about, like, parsley? Or are you talking
yeah.
about, like...
parsley or cilantro.
If you have parsley, basil, or cilantro, I use them as the base for a green sauce. And then I just basically put all of my herbs in. You know, if there's a little thyme, I throw that in there. And so you blend it up with, you know, olive oil, a little chili, some capers, an anchovy, and then it's essentially your leftover herbs are preserved in oil for, you know, it'll last like a week.
Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, I think pesto is sort of the classic answer. I tend to veer away from more traditional pesto towards like either throwing in some greens, you know, like arugula or spinach or something, or going more towards like a chimichurri
mm-hmm.
and adding some acid, which, you know, if you throw some vinegar or lemon juice in there, it's not going to be green for as long,
yeah.
but it's, I think, delicious.
Well, sometimes what I'll do is I'll blend it and then, like, add the acid as I'm using the sauce. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, so it stays vibrant and then...
I'm totally going to do that.
That's pretty smart.
Okay, do you guys ever blanch? Do you bother to blanch your
oh,
herbs
God,
to keep
no.
them
oh, never.
Greener?
Never.
I think that's a myth.
I think it
I
is,
like
too.
I feel like people who say that they do that are
yeah,
lying.
I feel like that's a total basil pesto myth, too.
Yeah.
That it stays green and vibrant if you do that.
Yeah, I think it's wasted effort. Yeah.
And,
I,
like, wasted dishes mm-hmm. and wasted... It just don't do that.
Yeah,
don't
you lose
that.
The texture.
Get those 5 minutes of your
yeah.
life back.
I mean, that's the whole idea of using your leftovers in a creative way, right? Because if you have... like steak and green sauce, which is, Amanda, one of your like back pocket dinners
mm-hmm.
for dinner one night. Then the next day you can sort of like eat that on a sandwich with green sauce. Do you guys have any tips for sort of like, you know, reimagining your leftovers and not just eating them day in and day out? Because that's effective from a financial perspective, but it's super boring. And how do you not get sick of that?
I think that's one of the biggest challenges. I feel like I learned some great things from my mother. She was really good at this. And in particular, I think my favorite example of a brilliant use of leftovers that she used to do all the time was for leftover roast chicken, which I think, imagine all of us are always kind of looking for ways to use leftover roast chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I often will cook one on a Sunday night and then sort of make it last throughout the week. I suspect a lot of other people do something
similar. I feel
like
that's the hallmark meal stretching thing.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
yeah. Chicken. It kind of is, right?
Yeah.
So my mom would do this great, she'd make this great salad where she'd shred up, you know, the leftover roast chicken, and then she made a warm salad dressing. So she would heat olive oil in a pan, like in a frying pan, and add vinegar and very simple vinaigrette, and she would salt and pepper, and she would just heat it up and then toss the chicken pieces in that and rewarm them in that vinaigrette. Oh, and she also put potatoes in there. First she fried slices of potatoes and then she made the vinaigrette sort of in with the potatoes and then threw in the chicken, tossed it all together, and then served it all warm over a bed of lettuce. So the lettuce got a little bit wilty with the warm vinaigrette and the warm chicken and potatoes. And it's just, I don't know, it's
I
delicious.
I love that. That salad
sounds,
is on the site.
It
is. And I
and
love it
in
so
our
much.
Upcoming book too. If we ever get a book contract. Hello, we're waiting.
you're literally writing the book on the subject.
We
of
are,
meal
yeah.
planning.
Amanda and I are writing a book about this very topic, which is cooking ahead for the week and how to be thoughtful and creative with your mm-hmm. leftovers and sort of using different things in different ways together. Mm-hmm.
I went through this whole kind of like low period in my cooking about a year and a half ago, where I realized that on I was roasting everything. Mm-hmm. I was like,
I think we all have that.
I'm gonna roast some chicken. I'm gonna roast some potatoes. I'm gonna roast butternut squash. And like we were just eating roasted food in other in like various combinations
with no sauces or textures.
And I became really depressed about cooking. Mm-hmm. And like I couldn't figure out like what the problem was. And then it occurred to me that I just had become, like, I was just in production mode, you know, I had young kids and I was busy and we were eating totally healthy food, but I was bored to death.
Yeah.
And, you know, and actually I kind of climbed out of this low point by going back to recipes and getting like inspiration from other people and just honestly cooking from the site and all the time. And so what happened was like now I've cooked so many recipes from the site and I have sort of like go-to things that, you know, I found that like work and there are ideas in them that I wouldn't have come up with. And over time you find that these ideas kind of build and layer into your cooking.
Mm-hmm. I love the idea of returning to recipes when you're sort of cooking on autopilot for a while and how it sort of jump starts you. If anybody knows me, that they know that I make scrambled egg tacos like it's my job, like all the time.
I didn't know that about you, and I feel like I know you.
Well, now you know. Now you know. And now we have just bonded.
Yes.
And they're great, but I start to get a little sad when I eat them like 3, 4, 5 times a week because they're also snack, they're breakfast, they're lunch, they're dinner, they're everything. Mm-hmm. So I have to. It becomes an internal, like, dialogue, like, make yourself a real meal, Kenzie. Like, go try something new. Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy when I do. So that's actually a great way to go into Kristen's question on my new scrambled eggs for dinner. Let's listen to her question.
I eat eggs for dinner way more often than I would like to admit, so I need something that will be my new eggs for dinner, preferably something that will be super fast to cook and I can keep the ingredients on hand forever and they're always there for me. Thank you.
So Kristen and I share the same problem. We eat eggs for, I mean, they're so easy.
Yeah.
Making scrambled eggs, throwing them in a tortilla or not on toast is super easy and takes about 5 minutes, but it's also really boring when you do it for the fifth time that week. So are there any things that you cook that have very few ingredients that you can kind of throw together with your eyes closed after you walk in the door?
There are two things I eat all the time. One of them is my egg equivalent. I mean, I have eggs too, but any kind of toast, ricotta, and something else combination. So I always have ricotta on hand. I always have bread on hand. And then usually there's something else to layer on top. So, you know, maybe it's wilted greens or maybe it's, you know, meat sauce even or something, some other kind of vegetable that can just be piled on top and basically make like a 3-layer open-faced tartine for myself. But the other thing I do, and this does require having something on hand, that I'm guessing Kristen usually has something like this on hand. I bake a sweet potato and then cut it open, sort of mush it up a little bit, like, you know, with a fork, get it scraped up and sort of fluffy, and drizzle some olive oil over it and salt and pepper, and then I top it with pasta sauce. So you kind of get, because sweet potatoes, I love sweet potatoes, but I don't like them with more sweet on them. I like them, the sweetness to be balanced with something savory and, you know, acidic, ideally. Mm-hmm. So I find that a tomato-based pasta sauce, whether it has meat or doesn't, is a really nice foil for the sweet potato. It's like I just love the contrast. Usually my pasta sauce has some kind of meat in it. So, like, my ideal combination would probably be some sort of sausage ragu or something on a baked sweet potato. And then you could put an egg on it, too.
I would eat that.
Yeah.
I would eat that. Amanda, do you have any back pocket, super fast weeknight dinners?
Well, I feel like mine's less fun.
Really? See, but I don't feel mine are fun because I do them all the time. So I think we all feel that way.
Well, right? Switch.
Yeah. We're going to rotate.
Mine tends to be like salad because we always have some kind of good dressing around, like salad with avocado.
Yum.
Sometimes avocado with, if we have, in the winter, I'll do oranges and, you know.
That sounds totally fun.
That's definitely
It's wild.
Fun.
It's crazy.
It's so crazy.
It's a wild Wednesday nights with citrus salads. It's a good time.
I have to ask a quick question of you guys. I feel like, does anyone feel they've gotten to the point with avocado toast where they find it sort of boring?
Oh, yeah.
Even though you love it?
Yeah.
I love it still, but it depresses me to eat it because I feel like I'm so predictable.
It's a little bit of a security blanket. Like, I know it'll be there for me, but I feel like Or I don't know, maybe that's the wrong analogy. What is it like? Like a really comfortable pair of underwear, but really like...
with some holes.
Right, but you should be going for the sexy ones. But you know that those ones are going to be comfortable and
there
around.
There was a story in the New York Times recently about how women are getting back to comfy underwear. So maybe we should just embrace the avocado toast
and wear our
comfy underwear.
Just sit in our comfy underwear, eat our avocado toast.
Right now.
I want to make sure that we get to dessert.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. We have a really great question about meal planning and how it relates to dessert. I feel like a lot of people think of maybe lunches and definitely dinners when they think of meal planning strategy. Like, let's make sure we have all these hearty grains and greens and stuff. But, like, we need dessert during the week, too. Mm-hmm. So let's answer Jonah's question.
Hi, my name is Jonah, and I'm calling into Burnt Toast because I believe that every meal should end with a dessert. And Amanda, I know you believe the same thing. So aside from baking basics like flour and sugar, what ingredients do you suggest stocking up on to prepare for a full week of dessert?
Other than flour and sugar, stock up on salted butter, eggs.
Chocolate, perhaps?
Chocolate, yes.
I feel like fruit makes for really easy, fast desserts. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I mean, yes, exactly. I've been buying rhubarb like nobody's business. Actually, the dessert I've been making for the week, I would say for the past month, is basically a play on Marion Bull's blueberry schlumpf, which I make with rhubarb. But I've, like, messed around with the toppings. Like, I've added quinoa to the top. It's basically a very big, flat crumble. Mm-hmm. So you get a thin layer of fruit and then a thin layer of topping, and the topping gets really crunchy and delicious. And her version is, like, a sort of butter, sugar, flour, mm-hmm. kind of classic. I've added quinoa. Last week, I added coconut, like unsweetened coconut flakes, and a little quinoa, and a little oats. Not too much, though, because then otherwise it takes me back to the 70s.
Not in a good way.
And, Don't go there with your desserts.
And it was great, because you just, like, chop up the fruit, mix it with I added a little almond extract to the fruit, and then you put on the topping. It takes, like, 10 minutes to assemble, and then, you bake it in this big baking dish, and the kids just spoon it out.
Yum.
But you're also a fan of the everyday cake.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like this about you a lot, and I haven't been able to yet adapt
I'm
that.
Glad you found
like
a you, scrap to lie.
It's one of the only things I like about you. Please don't fire me. but you like will make a cake on a Sunday or a weekend, and you choose a recipe that will sort of get better and better and last the entire week. Do you have any... I mean, your almond cake actually works really well for this.
Nut cakes do really well. Sort of like white cakes don't.
Right.
They don't
last. They're done. Yeah.
Yeah.
No
yeah,
wedding so, cakes for the week.
Yeah. I was on a big butter cake kick because those last. But I really had trouble actually finding a great recipe. There was one on Bon Appetit that was terrific that had apples in it. The chocolate cakes, they can last. Like, I love the Nigella Lawson chocolate loaf cake.
Mm-hmm. So squidgy.
Yeah, that's a great one. And that's the kind of one where you're going to want to make two.
Just warning you.
But cakes are a great weekend thing to bake on a Sunday. I would bake that on Sunday and have for the week because, you mix everything in basically one bowl, put it in a pan, and then... it's essentially done. You know, cookies with their batches are so annoying. I don't recommend doing those for the week. And also because cookies, they have a way of like disappearing by Tuesday.
True. It's just like people, so easy to take more.
Yeah, you kind of like, because people are like, oh, I'm just walking through the kitchen, I'm going to grab a cookie. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like a slice of cake, people don't just like, swipe a slice of cake
and put
or like take it to work, for instance.
Right? Yeah.
For me, that's sort of the hallmark of like adulthood. Like if there's a platter of something, like there's a platter of like confection,
yes.
or, like a platter of cookies or cake just sitting out in the kitchen, like you, like
that
you've
you're
made
grown
it.
Up.
Yeah, you've made it. I'm clearly not there yet, but I have aspirations.
One other type of cake though that I think lasts really well. It's the wrong season for it, but I make it a lot in the fall. Is applesauce cake. Because that really...
that is such a great recipe.
That stays good. Or just any old applesauce cake. I have a recipe on the site that I make a lot. But I think just anything with applesauce, it keeps it and makes sure it's not going to get dry. Mm-hmm. The other thing I like to do... Amanda, this is going to go against your cookie stance. But I do like to make meringues because I often have leftover egg whites. And So it's a way to use those up. And I also think they're easier. You don't have to do batches usually. You just kind of like whip up two or three egg whites, and then I just cover three pans and put them all in the oven at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You need oven time, which is the only challenge. But then what I love about them is you can either have them as cookies and maybe put chocolate chips in them or almonds or something. You can also use them. You can then repurpose them for other desserts. Like right now, I feel like this is a bit of a cliche. Everyone's talking about it, but I keep making Eat and Mess, which I love. And if you don't know it, it's basically just crumbled meringue with folded in with whipped cream and fresh fruit. Traditionally, strawberries and raspberries are used, but you can really use any kind of juicy fresh fruit.
I sounded so stingy around my cookies.
No, you did.
My cooking theory.
And you make cookies, too. I know that.
But I do. And I do actually like making bar cookies. That's mm-hmm. sort of like a new thing because, you know, you can keep them in the pan. Is there just something about cakes, though? You feel proud of your cake.
Yeah, I know. You know? It's an accomplishment.
And it does sit on the counter. You put it on a cake plate.
It's a week and you baked a cake just because.
Yeah.
That's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
It's definitely something to be proud of. The last question is about grocery runs and pantry. It's sort of like going back to step one. We've talked about a lot of things to make, but I think the first step is in making sure that you have stuff always on hand, aside from the condiment graveyard in your fridge or the green sauce that you may have made. So let's listen to Leslie's question.
Hi, my name is Leslie, and I'm calling because my question about meal planning is that every time I'm at the grocery store on Sunday trying to plan my meals for the week, I have a hard time visualizing what I should buy to get the most out of my big grocery run. So what do you buy to stretch into meals until the next big grocery run?
You mean like primary ingredients or?
I think the way I interpret this question is like grains, mm-hmm. beans,
basic staples.
Yeah, but then also like I don't want to forget about the like always have a tin of anchovies. That's something that I always make sure that I have, like capers or anchovies or something that won't go bad, but that will change the flavor of my food in a sort of not menial way.
I think citrus is important for me at least. I always, whenever I'm getting groceries and I know that I'm running low, I always make sure to stock up on lemons and limes and usually some sort of orange situation too.
Yeah.
If the season is right. Because, you know, you can not only use the fruit, but you can just use the zest. You can just use the juice. You can kind of use all parts of it for different purposes. I often have, I bet you do too, like a bald lemon sitting in the fridge because I've only used the zest and then I'm just waiting to use for this juice, which always, you know, appears. There's always some reason to use lemon or lime.
Totally. Totally agree with that. Always have onions. I always just buy onions.
Yeah.
Like, sort of obsessively.
Yeah.
And carrots.
You can never have too many onions.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of the Marcella sauce that, you know, I'm always like, just in case.
Yep.
We always have palmy tomatoes and yellow onions. But in terms of like real flavor elements, I think I always have garlic and you know, I keep that in the fridge and always have several heads just in case.
Mm-hmm.
And then capers, anchovies, ground chili pepper or like, you know, chili flakes, and obviously good salt.
Good olive oil, good mustard.
Good olive oil.
I always
good
mustard, maple syrup, a couple grains like farro, barley, a few different rices. I mean, that's more sort of stocking your pantry, but
I find I kind of forget about onions, and I'm glad that you brought that up.
Really?
Because
that's
very,
so interesting.
There are very few things that can't be improved by just throwing half of an onion in there. And many things start that way, too. That's
right.
The start of
onions. I actually, along those lines, I tend to always have celery and carrots as well.
Oh,
I've gone against celery.
Classic. Really?
Yeah, I don't put it into my sauces or
interesting.
Anything.
I don't always, but I often, I put it in stock always.
What did it do to offend you?
It's like that metallic flavor
that
I don't like. But even though I like eating raw celery.
Oh, you do?
Occasionally.
I'm totally the opposite. I like cooked and not raw. That's interesting.
That's why we're partners.
Yeah, exactly.
The yin to your celery yang. Do you ever cook things entirely ahead or in parts and put them in the freezer to pull out later?
Yeah, I actually have a baked pasta that I make a lot with typically sausage, like a sausage meat sauce that sort of gets folded into it usually with a little bit of cream or creme fraiche, so it's sort of like a pink sausage sauce. And I always make two batches of it and put one, usually in one of those like tin foil, you know, oven ready containers so that I can just put it from the freezer directly into the oven. I can never, it never makes sense to just make one. I always want more of it later.
My last question is, do you have any, I have a freezer graveyard, I think, worse than I have a fridge graveyard. Do you have any stories of unearthing something from a very, very long time ago? I found just the other day one partially wrapped short rib in the very back. And I remember when it came from, and it was a photo shoot like at least a year ago.
Oh, a year? That's not
But he was so, he was both sad and like naked.
Yeah.
So like he definitely tasted like freezer at that point.
I feel
bad
for him, but I don't feel that. I definitely don't judge you for something that was only around for a year.
Thank you.
Yeah, I feel like maybe I shouldn't go there now that you've set a year as the bar.
No, I want to be bested.
Well, we actually have a chest freezer in our basement as well as the freezer.
Oh, those are dangerous.
They are really dangerous. They're wonderful, but dangerous. You know what I tend to find more often that is in a really sorry state, and I think it's just because they just don't keep as long, and it's hard to get all the air out and really kind of protect them, is baked goods, or dough. I tend to do things like, so if I'm ever in Boston, I have to go to Flower Bakery, where I used to work and just have always loved everything they make, and they make this amazing multigrain bread. They also make rolls, which are my favorite, and it's perfect, and I can never make their recipe properly myself. So I always buy a whole bunch, and then I freeze a lot of them, and inevitably I forget at a certain point that I have them there, and then I find them later, and freezer burned bread is so sad, because you see, it's sort of, you can see where the freezer burn has just, like, it's just eating away at it like a virus.
It's literally frostbitten.
You know? Yeah,
you have to amputate. Like,
yeah,
no...
and it's so dry, and it's just, oh,
it makes
so,
me so sad.
And I also feel even more sad if it's something like that, because it's such a, something I love so much, and, you know, made a special trip to get it, and I know I can't get it again anytime soon, and then I've just killed it.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I know.
Oh. R.I.P.
so
bread. but that's one of my favorite things to put in the freezer, bread. Like, reconstituting bread.
Remember, it's great.
Is one of my favorite things.
So I have to admit a freezer fear, which is like, I like to put things in my freezer. I make stocks and I like stack them up, and then when I go to use them, I always get convinced that they have freezer burn and that I won't discover until the dish is like made.
Oh, yeah, it'd be ruined.
I have this kind of like anxiousness about my freezer.
Hmm.
About things that are in there for long term.
Yeah.
Like, I don't trust that they're okay.
I'm glad we had that airing out of anxiety. So that's it for this episode of Burnt Toast. Our producer is Tim Einenkel. Thanks also to Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers at Panoply. Please let us know what you think of the show. Our Twitter address is @food52, and you can email us at editors@food52.com. If you like the show, tell everyone you know, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you have any meal planning tips to share with us, we'd love to hear them. Tweet at us and hashtag your tweet with F52podcast, and we'll share our favorites. For Meryl Stubbs and Amanda Hesser, I'm Kenzie Wilbur. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening.